politicians make promises, Dave Lavery gets results. He's a founding member of the JTF2, Canada's special forces, essentially. And I've known a bunch of the guys in there quite well. These are the best of the best. They are quiet. They are not looking for glory. And they are out there to complete a mission and save lives and get the job done. And if you know a guy named Canadian Dave, you're about to meet him. He has been quietly working in the midst of the collapse of Afghanistan, the 20-year war, the longest war in American history, over. People stranded. And you know how people got out? They got out because some people gave a damn and risked their lives, and one of them was David. And he joins us now. He's known as the Canadian Dave. 100 people he got out in the final days. Thank you, sir, for your service. David Lavery, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. it's very humbling.
Well, I've known your story for a while. I've worked behind the scenes to try to get the story out, and it helps get some people out or support the people doing it. A lot of veterans at the Veterans Transition Network and others who are doing incredible work to do it. But you were on the ground, and I want Canadians to know your story. And so before we get to Kabul, I just want people to know your service to the country. How long were you in serving in not only in the Canadian Armed Forces, but in JTF2?
It's surprising even JTF2 has brought up. I'm not even mentioning anything on that. I'm proud to say that I did belong to the unit, but I would just leave it at that. At this stage, I've served for the military 23 years. I retired as a non-commissioned officer, and I ventured into my own business, and I ended up in the United Nations as one of the senior security advisors for about 10 years, and my first 5 years was actually in Afghanistan from 01 to 05. And while I was in there, yes, a lot of our military guys and gals, they were in town, in country, as I was with the UN. But I had a lovely time in the military. I have total respect for everybody that serves, still serving, and I am just honored to be in the presence of a lot of folks that are doing business, both militaries, you know, the Canadian militaries, the U.S., the Brits, everybody, and more so the British paras that really were a phenomenal bunch of folks during this whole event.
Let's walk us through. Your story is incredible. You know this country well. You've been there. You have contacts everywhere. Walk us through when you knew the Taliban were about to win, and not just there's going to be a long road, but they're coming to Kabul where you were.
Well, I mean, I think it's to walk us through that. I mean, a lot of us were taken, you know, caught off guard. Let's just be very honest there. We knew the inevitable was coming, that we were all preparing it. We were all looking at our contingency plans. We had that in place, but because we've taken on more projects, more people were demanding more assistance because of the concern that the Taliban were coming to town, it sort of put us in a different position. We were concentrating on others instead of concentrating on ourselves. So the actual timelines and everything, they became very, very rapid, to be honest. You know, a few months back, you know, we knew it was coming, but everybody figured we still had, you know, months and months and months, not weeks and then days and then hours. And it started to really change rapidly when the north fell, you know, especially Mazar City, and then they were starting to get closer. And when they were getting that close, it was, okay, that's all right. Kabul is going to be still safe. There's a lot of security. Taliban's not going to come on in. They're still going to honor. So there was that misconception also. I think there was a lot of window dressing going on for the last year and a half or whatever, and there was a big facade. And to be honest, I think the Taliban played a decent role in deceiving and moving and at lightning speed and taking over things, telling everybody.
August 15th, you know, they take over. You're the only Canadian left. Like I remember the government evacuates the embassy, the diplomats fly out. And I'll tell you, folks, there are thousands of Canadians and thousands of interpreters who want to get out. And you know how many Canadians were left at the ground on Hamid Karzai Airport in the midst of that chaos? And I'd love you to describe it. One, and it was you, Canadian Dave. What was it like? Can you just describe what you were seeing?
Well, I mean, the first bit, again, you have to realize we went into evacuation mode, Evan. We had to leave our property, our team, after we sanitized everything and cleaned things up and destroyed and burned and packed up and moved to the Barron. That was our contingency plan all along. We were going to move into the Barron and stay in that location. One, it's close to the airport. You can get in through the back area. It's secure. They had decent security on that place. And it was a good logistical hub. At the same time, I had my son with me, my wife with me, and one of my staff members. So you have a lot of things running through you, and then you have an obligation to all your clients. So I had three priorities: my team, my family, my clients, and then our Canadian project that we are looking after and still are with the Canadian Afghan applicants that also need a place and need to get out. So when we got up into the Barron area and we were starting to adjust into our new environment, things started to happen rapidly fast. I mean, very fast. And by the next morning, when we woke up, the British forces, the paratroopers, they were taking over. They were controlling that whole battle space, that whole area, which was a good thing for us, because within hours, the streets were flooding. And as you saw on the TV, you saw thousands of people rushing the airport, hanging off planes, getting onto the aprons. It was the noise. It was the buzz. There was continuous gunfire going on all the time. You just didn't know who was doing what. There was a lot of folks in town saying they were Taliban, but they weren't Taliban. There was just criminal elements. You know, it was desperate times, and people were doing desperate things. It was all about survival, and it was weird. It was different than even a movie that you watch. You know, the zombie movies and all these things where people are acting and just jumping off buildings and buses and cars and stuff, and then.
Like you're saying, it was just that.
It was that chaotic for people to get to the airport. Yeah.
God, Dave, it was crazy.
Yeah. So once the dust settles a little bit and people start realizing they've got to get to the airport after a couple of days, that's when we started to kick in. When I say we, myself, I'm on the ground by myself. But when I say we have an army of phenomenal people sitting back home all across Canada, all our veterans, the Veterans Transition Network. You've got Amalara. You've got ACI with Wendy leading that. You've got a whole bunch of retired senior officers, generals, media crew, just doing a phenomenal job. And this for us, and that's a different story for us, you know, it didn't start on the 15th. You know, this is going back years of preparation and then back to June, setting up, you know, safe locations, et cetera, to help out all of those, you know, over 1,300 applicants or whatever it is. Once people started screaming towards the Barron and that gate to try to get on a Freedom Bird to get out of country, that's when the chaos really started to happen. And then once people started making it in and there was sort of a process going on, then people were getting trapped in, you know, just trapped in the volume of people to go 800 meters. It might have taken them 12 hours to 24 hours. And then you had kids, you had pregnant women, and you were getting suffocated. You were getting trampled. Jeez.
And then
people were passing out. They were throwing babies over the wire. That kids were passed to us. I had to pass them on to my wife. You know, the British soldiers, if it wasn't for the British para, we would have had chaos. They were phenomenal.
Dave, just stay with me. We're going to keep you for another block. This is the most important story, and I'm going to tell you something. I was following you because I was on a series of calls that you were on from Kabul, but we'll talk about that. This story of how the lives were actually saved from the man on the ground, okay, continues next.
When important decisions are made, we report. Here's Evan Solomon.
At one point during the crisis in Kabul, a bunch of journalists and a lot of veterans, you know them, veterans like General Dave Fraser, who's a regular on this program, General Thompson, who's been on this program many times, Kevin Newman, great journalist, Lisa LaFlamme, a bunch of people who are very interested in this situation. We got on a call. There was a morning briefing, and on the call was the guy known as Canadian Dave, Dave Lavery. And he was in Kabul, he was with his family, and he was rescuing people, and it was chaos. And it was after August 15th, the Taliban had taken over, the Canadians were leaving, and people were surrounding the Hamid Karzai International Airport and trying to get out. And former Special Forces soldier, works with the UN, has his own security company in Kabul. Dave Lavery was just going to stay, not get out, and he's going to help people, and he joins us now. Your service and your story... I know you're modest, and I know you're used to it because that's what you've been doing for decades, but it's remarkable. Tell us how you were getting people out. You got more than 100 people out, and apparently everyone was looking for the Canadian Dave. It was bureaucratic chaos. There was danger. The Taliban were shooting. People were literally lining up in a sewage pit, a sewage drain, basically, outside the Hamid Karzai Airport. How were you getting people from their homes inside the wire onto planes?
Well, that was a good one. I mean, there's a lot, like I said at the beginning, there's a lot of desperate things happening. Desperate people will do desperate things. And we would advise folks if they could move, if they could get to the Baron, the front gate, or the northeastern gate or the back gate, to do so the best way they could. You know, we would tell people to dress light, good shoes, put a backpack, fill it full of water, you know, keep small things close to you, your family, stay united, and you would have to push your way to the front. And once you get there, pull out a red scarf or put on a red hat or something like that and use the code word Canada or Canadian Dave, or get on your phone. For those that were in contact with somebody, somebody would contact me, take a picture. I would have an idea which area to look in. And the beauty behind this is, as I said before, at the very beginning, there wasn't very many people in the area except for the British and myself, and they were really, for the longest time, they were wondering, who is this crazy dude running around back and forth doing a marathon every day trying to grab folks? I wasn't just Canadians. A lot of my clients are German clients, so I had an obligation to over 300 of them, and then obviously all of our Canadian applicants, and for that matter, anybody who had, you know, a passport, and they waved it at us. And if we could do something to pull them in, we'd pull them in.
But the Taliban, just so people know, like Dave, the Taliban are out the wire, and getting them from their house through the wire, you're essentially running the gauntlet. These people are not wanted they're wanted by the Taliban. These are wanted people. Taliban does, these are people who work with the West against the Taliban. So you're literally, I guess you and all those folks are in mortal danger all the time.
Well, I mean, I wasn't in the front danger line, I would say. I was out there, you know, you're meters away on the other side of the barbed wire from the Taliban. So the Taliban, they were controlling it. But also, they were overwhelmed, too, with thousands of people rushing to the entry point. And it was a choke point. You know, it's a roadway. And then before you know it, it's trying to be controlled by the Taliban. And then makeshift barriers being put up. And the British soldiers were doing riot control. And then, obviously, I would, you know, get to know a lot of them. And I said, hey, listen, if anybody comes in and they're yelling out Canadian Dave or Canada or, you know, whatever, and they were waving red, just let me know and I'll come on in. And it was perfect. I mean, you would be getting calls. Where's Canadian Dave? Where's Dave? You know, we got some Canadians. We got some Germans. Wow. So to get people to that point, you know, you can't imagine what it was like when you had staff members and you had folks that you knew and you were telling them to run the gauntlet. It wasn't the greatest feeling, I can tell you that. It was something that I've never experienced before. You know, the noise, the smell, the scenery, you just can't get that stuff out. And then when you said, you know, people standing in the swamp, the sewage area, we call it the swamp, It was surreal because no matter what time of day it was, there was always that hum and buzzing and people yelling and asking and pleading, help me. I've got a password. Oh, I work for the Canadians. I work for the Germans. Take my kids, whatever it was.
But Dave, so, you have your own kids there. I just want people to know your wife and family are there. And on August 6, 26, a suicide bomber blows himself up at the gate, in the swamp, at the gates to where a lot of these people are, killing U.S. Marines, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's literally, what, an hour? Your wife and kids were evacuated like they were just not far from that, were they?
Yeah, so back up. My son, so everybody thinks I have little kids. My son is 36. My son is 36. He got out on a Canadian plane. He was lucky. I know the Canadians, you know, they offered to come and pick up myself and my family complete and, you know, doing a great job, but sort of put me in a predicament also. That night when the Canadians arrived, they gave us a call. Dave, we're on our way to pick you up. They showed up and I saw, this is awesome, because I told my son and my family, I said, don't worry, the Canadians will be coming. You're going to be well looked after. So I said, yep, Brent, you're going to head off. And I said, my wife will accompany my son. I'm staying behind. I can't leave. I've got a duty to do back here with my clients. And I have a lot going on with our veterans and our team back in Canada. We have a big picture. We have a big plan. And we're working well. And we will continue to work well. So just take my son and my wife. And they looked at my wife. Passport. We're just she's Chinese, but has a Canadian visa in it, and we're married. Mm. And they said, unfortunately, we can't take your wife. And I'm going, excuse me. They said, no. The only way your wife's going to get on that plane is if you come on with her. And I said, well, I can't do that. Well, then she can't come on the plane. So, Evan, it sort of put me in an awkward spot, and it shouldn't have never happened, but it did. So, long story short, I ended up going with them to the airfield where the Canadians were processing, extremely upset, you know, hummed and hawed, really upset. And I asked them again if they would just take my son and my wife. They said, nope, your son can go. Your wife can't go unless you go. And I said, okay. So a couple hours later, I basically called up my German clients. And I said, here's the deal. And they said, well, you can't leave. We need you to help out with the rest of the stuff that you're doing. Yeah, you know, I'd had everybody lined up. I had everybody outside the gates ready to come on in. And so they said, all I asked, I said, basically, all I need is two seats on your German planes and I'll stay behind and I'll have no problems. So they called back to Germany and they woke up some deputy minister late at night and told them the story. And it was no issues. They said,
okay, yep, Dave, hang on just for time. I want to have you back on. My listeners across the country want to hear this. Someone just asked me, did you leave anybody behind? Of course they did. There are hundreds and thousands of people. But let me tell you, Dave Lavery, Canadian Dave, former Special Forces soldier, is not going to stop. He's still working. There's operations going on. I want to assure our listeners, he is working every moment, and his team and many soldiers, many veterans, many groups of people are working to still get people out. This operation is far from over. I want to assure people. And if you wouldn't mind, Dave, I would love to continue our conversation and keep following the story so the media doesn't forget it. And if we'll call you anytime, because I really, one thing the media does, they forget about these things. We won't. Please come back on. And you have an open invitation here any day of the week, sir. Thank you for your service and thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Much appreciated. I'd love to come on back on.
And you will.